Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom quality, made-in-Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's GHIRELLI.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. And I do mean welcome. I hope you can pull up a nice seat and a awesome whiskey glass. Maybe a Catholic Man Show whiskey glass. A lot of people received new Catholic Man Show Glencairn glasses this week.
Yes, a lot of people could be breaking them in for the first time.
That would be epic to do that on, like, while we're recording on the show.
So epic. Hey, I have a good question for you.
Okay.
I was thinking about this today. Why is the word shepherd not pronounced shepherd?
Oh, with the PH?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Shouldn't it be shepherd? I mean, like, are rules just meaningless in the English language?
Yeah, the answer is yes to that.
Yeah.
To that question. Anyway. Yeah,
I just thought maybe you'd be able to help me out there.
I'm sorry. I provide zero help.
Words are hard.
Words are hard. Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles. Dave, how was your week this week?
I'll do it. My week was, let me think about it.
Okay.
It was good. It was fair. Nothing exciting that I can think of anyway that comes to mind, but it was a good week.
I had an exciting week.
I almost always have good weeks, good days. Mm-hmm. I'm just an optimistic person, you know what I mean?
In general. I had a very exciting week this week.
Do tell. Do tell.
My daughter turned 2. Anna Faustina turned 2 years old.
Indeed.
So that's pretty fun.
Indubitably.
She had a birthday party this weekend. She was very excited. She's like the happiest baby I think I know.
She's pretty happy. I'm like her step godfather because my wife is her godmother.
Yes, that's true.
So I'm like a step godfather.
Also, let me throw this out at you. See what you think about this.
Okay.
Haley's pregnant.
Yeah, dude. I know. That's awesome.
High five. Very nice. Very excited. Haley is pregnant. So if you could keep us in your prayers, we're very excited to be able to welcome number four to this world. Pray for a healthy...
That's numero cuatro.
Cuatro, yes. Yeah. Pray for a healthy pregnancy.
Don't say it like that. You sound ridiculous when you say it like that.
Oh, sorry.
It's quattro.
Yeah, sorry.
Distance poor.
So anyway, keep us in your prayers. We're obviously extremely excited.
Through the intercession of
Saint Gerard.
Saint Gerard, yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's like when people have a cause going and they're like, hey, you know, we're doing this through this intercession.
Right.
You know,
please. Yeah, because St. Gerard is my family's patron saint. So
he served you well.
He has. He's done very well. So this evening we're going to drink. This is a cool bottle. This is a very cool bottle. So it's a Muirhead Silver Seal Highland Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. It's aged 16 years. But on the bottle, read that
it
right
says, there. It says Auxilio Dei.
Which is with the help of God.
With the help of God.
So, oh yeah, put in that Bev cam and we'll...
I just wasn't done looking at it.
So anyway, that's... I thought that was a pretty cool bottle. So let's try it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. Cheers. Auxilio Dei.
So I'll read the tasting notes as you drink and you can tell me what your thoughts are. So the tasting notes is fruity overtones of summer rhubarb. Are the order of the day with the nose. I think that's a cool way of saying it. The order of the day.
Indeed.
Malt is the first in line, followed by some oak, spice, and creamy vanilla. The palate is walnuts, cigar boxes, and vanilla custard with a hint.
How can you put that on the... It's not the smell of cigar boxes, but it is the taste.
Yeah. With a hint of allspice, which whatever allspice is... Besides the deodorant.
Yeah.
Or no, that's Old Spice. Sorry. A delicate and mineral lay finish completes this dram, is what it says.
Okay.
What are your thoughts of it?
Man, it's kind of, it's a very good Highland whiskey.
On the nose for me, I get like green apple, citrus. I get a little honey.
To me, it kind of it's got that very standard Highland whiskey of it's very smooth and not.
It's not very complex.
It's not gonna offend anybody. You know what I mean?
No, it's not very complex.
But there's a lot of people out there who that's what they like. You know, they like the smoothness of the drink. They like that it goes down easy. Maybe they had a hard day. They don't want a hard drink. You know, they want something that is gonna take.
It's
relax.
It's a very quick finish. It does not linger in the mouth.
How much was it?
It was about, I believe it was about $50 for a 16-year. That's why I went. That's why I took the plunge and said, I think this is worth at least trying at a 16-year-old scotch.
Sure. I don't know if this is true or not, but in my experience, it seems like longer aged whiskeys mellow out a lot of the flavors that you get, you know, like smoky whiskeys. When I've had a, you know, 20 year versus a 12 year or just, you know, whatever, the older aged. Oh, you know, this is what I'm thinking of is Lagavulin.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the 16 more than the 21. Is it?
You've had the 21?
Yeah.
Wow. Was it awesome?
Well, yeah,
you
like, I mean,
you said you're thinking 8 and 16, I bet.
8 and 16. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I like the 8 more than the 16. That's
really?
Yeah.
I like the 16 better than the 8.
That's fair.
It's more of a punch in the mouth.
See, I thought it was less of a punch in the mouth.
Hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, I am known as the tongue on the show, yeah. So you guys take that for what you want.
Okay. Yes, you are.
But, I mean, this is a very... For it being aged 16 years, I would think that it'd be a little bit more complex than what this is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a good whiskey to have on your shelf to break out with guys that you have over, you know, discussing theology, you know, maybe your men's group, just to say, hey, we're going to have a 16-year-old scotch together. If you would have thrown this at me and wouldn't told me what year it was, I would have said it was probably like a 8-year scotch.
Yeah. Maybe 10.
There's just not a lot of... But the presentation is awesome.
And I like the Auxilio Dei.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like the presentation of the bottle, the presentation, knowing that it's a 16-year-old scotch, it is an A+.
Yeah. I will pay more for scotch if it says something that gives glory to God on the bottle. Like, I will.
Yeah. I would rate this whiskey, if I had to rate it, I would say a 6.5 out of 10.
I was going
to
say a 6.
6.5 is what I was... So, I mean, anyway, a Highland...
But for me, a Highland, I don't think I would ever rate a Highland scotch as a 10, because it's not my brand. You know what I'm saying? It's just not what I like.
I think it would be tough. I don't even know if I've had a tin whiskey. I've tried a lot of whiskeys. I don't know if I've ever rated, I would rate one as a tin. I've had a lot of really good whiskeys.
Yeah, that's just risky policy.
Right.
Because does that mean, I mean, I guess you could have another one that's also a 10. One could be a 10, and that doesn't mean it's the best whiskey in the world. You know what I mean? It depends. You know, like divers in the Olympics, you can get a perfect score, but that doesn't mean it was the best dive that ever took place.
Right. I mean, so this is
depends on what depends. It depends on your scale.
Right. It's subjective, right? Yeah. It depends on what the scale is.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I would never give a Highland a 10, okay, just because that's not my preference.
So Highlands are not going to be peaty for those who are not into the Scotch game.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a smoky. It's not going to be peaty. It's going to be a lot more honey, citrusy, shorter finishes. It'll be a little sweeter to the taste. A lot of Highlands are aged in sherry casks, so you're going to get the sherry notes to it, which is going to be the sweeter notes. Raisins is another common flavor within the Highlands. Which Highland is just like the location of where it is in Scotland.
Right. Yeah. More of the middle of the island, higher elevation. The water has different characteristics to it in that point, you know, before it's made it downstream. I'm a big fan of the Islay scotches or Islay scotches is how a lot of people say them, but I've been told it's really Islay. You know, they're there on the sea, so they kind of have more of a salty, peaty,
leathery.
I mean, you could make a peaty scotch in the Highlands. They just don't. That's just not what they do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And this is a 40% alcohol by volume, so it's not going to have a strong alcohol bite. Typically, Highlands do not have the strong alcohol bite.
Yeah, that's their characteristic. Is, I mean, if you're going to start drinking scotch, you should start with a Highland because they go down real easy.
Mm-hmm.
They're nice to drink.
And if you wanted to add a little bit of water to these, it makes it even easier.
Sure.
So anyway, we actually interviewed Mark Gillespie. He does a podcast called Whiskey Cast. And he gave us kind of the Whiskey 101. So if you go to thecatholicmanshow.com and type in Mark Gillespie or Whiskey Cast, it'll pop up.
That was a good interview.
And we learned a lot.
From that interview, I don't look down upon blended scotches.
We need to try to have another blended scotch soon. Mm-hmm. We haven't had one in a while.
I know. Was the green, Johnny Walker Green, is that the last one we did?
I believe so. That would be the last blended one we did, which I liked.
You know what? It was on sale at this local liquor store for $35 a bottle there for a long time. So I was buying it as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, we have about a minute left. Why are we drinking on air? I think that would be a good recap.
Because we're exercising the virtue of moderation.
That's kind of the gist.
That'd be the best reason, I would say.
Which we're going to be talking about virtue today. And actually, we're going to be talking about virtue and vice, specifically the capital vice of lust. But before we do that, we're going to get to the man gear when we get back. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking some Silver Seal 16-year Highland whiskey.
Adam Minahan, father of four.
What?
I said Adam Minahan, father of four.
Yes. Five.
Five, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Miscarriages are tough.
Yeah.
Should we do an episode one time on miscarriages?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it's something that I don't know what the stat is, but it, you know,
a lot of people have miscarriages.
I don't remember if it's the majority or almost the majority of marriages.
Maybe we should have because miscarriages are hard. Hey, before we get going on the gear, I want to thank all of our new patrons. We've had quite a few new patrons. If you just signed up for the Catholic or the patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, we will get new glasses and all your thank you gifts as soon as we can. Juan, Dave, and I spent well, from 5:30 to about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night one night last week.
I got home at just a little after midnight.
Yeah. We sent out like 172. Mm-hmm. Juan, is that right? 172, about 172 boxes of thank you gifts to people. So we want to thank all of you guys for supporting the Catholic Man Show. We're going to be continually adding new things. Everything that we get only helps the show. Dave and I don't take a cut of any of the profits. Also, if you sign up for the highest membership, which is the friends tier.
So when you came up with friend tier, you didn't at all pick up on the pun of like frontier?
No, I didn't.
Interesting.
But if you do, if you become a friends tier like Paul Day did.
Thanks, Paul.
You can, we'll shout you out on our show.
We'll do it Paul Day.
Yeah, Paul Day. We will also, interview, or actually have you guys interview us once a month. Have one guy from that tier interview us once a month.
See.
So it'd be cool. Anyway, thank you guys for supporting the Catholic Man Show, patreon.com/the Catholic Man Show. Dave, the man gear.
Before we do that, I just want to make an announcement.
Announcement?
Well, currently, this is not, I think probably everybody knows this, but there's a movie out right now. It's called Unplanned. Mm. It's about Abby Johnson and her, you know, the big life event that she had when she left Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. And it is so important that we all go see this movie. It's doing very well in the box office, but
despite Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter suspended the Unplanned had a Twitter page and it got suspended the day of the release.
Right.
So anyway,
they did unsuspended the same day, but
right, but still. Right. Anyway, go see the movie.
Right.
Man gear for today.
Yes.
Is it did we decide, is it the blazer or the sports jacket? I think the blazer,
but I think we need to differentiate.
But I think it could easily be a sports jacket.
Well, okay, let's talk about it. So the man gear today is the blazer. There are three different types of jackets that men wear.
Yeah.
The suit jacket, the blazer, and the sports jacket. So Dave, what are the difference between the three?
Okay. So a suit jacket is a jacket that comes with matching trousers. That's what completes the suit. You have pants and a jacket.
Right.
Okay. I think everybody knows that. That's what a suit is.
And you typically don't wear the jacket without the pants.
Right. You can. People might not notice, but that's just a bad idea, because if you are in the habit of wearing the jacket apart from the pants, over time, the jacket will fade more and will no longer match the pants.
Okay.
And with suits, if the color is off even a little bit, you notice.
Right.
Okay. And it kind of will ruin your suit.
It really goes, like, when you think that there's no such thing as like different shades of black, there definitely is.
Yes.
And you will...
there are approximately infinite number of shades of black. So anyway, then... And a suit jacket, that includes everything from tuxedo is a suit to just your basic navy blue suit. So then the next step down in formality, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead. That's what I was going to say.
Would be the blazer. Mm-hmm. And a blazer is almost the same quality or the same level of formality as a suit. It just doesn't have a matching pant. It just has no matching pants. However, I think that...
Well, it's not the same as format. It's not the same formality.
Almost. No, it's a step down, but it's pretty close.
Okay. But you can wear a blazer with jeans.
Yes, you can. It does go with jeans. No doubt. But if something were formal, you could wear a blazer. A blazer would be appropriate. If you wore other trousers.
Like khakis or...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, or just nice slacks. If you wore slacks and a blazer, that would fall into the formal category of dress. But I think that a blazer is often a heavier fabric. It also isn't going to fit quite as tight as a suit jacket will. You know, you want your suit jacket to really fit very well. Mm-hmm. Not that it's skin tight on you, or, you know, hipsters these days.
Right, but know, more like the James Bond.
Yeah,
idea.
Exactly. That it is cut appropriately for your body type. It should accentuate the shape of a man's build, mm-hmm. Kind of the upside down triangle. That's really what you're looking for in a suit. So the blazer is going to be a little less fitted, and the reason for that is maybe you can wear a vest under a sweater vest underneath. Mm-hmm. Just because the blazer, maybe you're going to be
maybe it's cold outside
more, yeah. Right? Yeah. If you're going to be outside a lot, you probably are not going to wear a suit. You might, but it's more likely, it's likely that you might wear a blazer instead. And so also I think you start to get into more tweed fabrics with the blazer. I'm not a big fan of making a statement with the pattern of a suit.
Okay. Like you mean like the crazy, sometimes they have the crazy
like checkered patterns or
Argyle. Is Argyle?
No, I don't know. I'm sure they make Argyle suits, but that would be really out there. But just...
What about pinstripe? Do you like pinstripe?
No, I do like a good pinstripe.
Okay.
I do like a good pinstripe. But when you get into like some of the weird... I like dark suits. I just think that... Lighter colored suits, and certainly...
Well, they're for summertime, right? Normally you wear a lighter color suit during the summertime.
You can, but really the dark... I mean, if you're going to get a suit, you need to get a dark suit. It needs to either be charcoal or navy. If you already have a navy pinstripe, a charcoal pinstripe, at that point, mm-hmm. then I think you expand out into... maybe a thinner fabric, summer, lighter colored suit.
Okay.
Maybe you could get a gray instead of...
Let's talk about the buttons.
Okay.
On the blazer.
So yeah, a blazer is often identifiable in because the buttons do not match the color. So on your suit, the cuff buttons are going to be the same color as the fabric itself.
It's not going to stand out.
Right. It's not going to stand out. But a blazer is either going to have usually silver or gold buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the buttons on your suit, hopefully they're not plastic. I mean, nobody's going to really know, but a good suit's going to be made of bone.
Horn,
yes. And that's going to last a lot longer because your plastic buttons will definitely break.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of time.
Right.
But they will wear out and they will break. Whereas the horn, it should last, I mean, as long as you don't, fall down and
let's talk about the novelty of the sports coat.
Okay.
Because I think that's interesting that I think in today's age, the sports coat is almost
sports
blended,
jacket. Yeah.
Or sports jacket is blended in with the blazer. Like mm-hmm. There used to be a very distinct line. Now it's very grayed.
Well, right. There used to be very well-defined etiquette protocol. And that, comes from, I think, our British roots. One of the things Britain culture did very well was have defined classes, defined activities with defined dress and behaviors and, things, ceremonies, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all those things are good in because they honor what it is you're doing. And it sets the mundane apart from the solemn.
So there's actually a virtue. It's called the virtue of decorum.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is dressing according to your state in life and the event that you're going to.
Right. But today, the average person is totally unaware of the fact that one thing might be more important than the other. And so everything is kind of devolved into more and more casual. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a financial advisor. We're one of the few industries that still
wears
a suit.
Wait, you give advice for a living?
I do. I know. People pay me for they want to know what I think.
Wow. Yeah.
But even in my industry now, a lot of the older guys, they wear golf shirts to work, and just mm-hmm. like that's like dressing up,
mm-hmm.
I don't think so. So I still wear a suit every day, but the sports jacket was originally for more of a hunting or, those kinds of activities where you're going to be outside. So they fit even looser because, it's going to be cold maybe outside. So you definitely would have a sweater on underneath. Or other layers.
They typically have they can have the elbow pad.
Yes, if you see an elbow patch, that's a sports jacket. But they're also made of more rugged material.
Mm-hmm.
They're the kind of thing that you would envision maybe falling in the mud. And when we say sports, it was really hunting, Not like football.
Right.
Or soccer.
Shooting. Skeet shooting.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The upper class sports. Mm-hmm. So the sports jacket is nice, though. It's also almost always a lighter color. It's not the dark formal color. It's the outside lighter colors.
A place to get a good suit, if you're looking for a good suit. I've gotten one. I think you've gotten several from Indochino.com.
Indochino.com, yeah. I like them.
It's a nice fitted suit.
Yeah.
So when we get back, we're going to talk about the 8 Daughters of Lust, according to St. Thomas Aquinas, who are on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Have a Catholic Man Show Glencairn glass with a silver seal, 16-year-old Highland Scotch. We're going to talk about the 8 Daughters of Lust from St. Thomas Aquinas. This is somewhat of a philosophical discussion. I'm not a philosopher, neither are you. No. So bear with us here. I think the best way to start it off is a... Maybe a story, but an example to get us going.
Okay.
So there's a man who is headed to a meeting. He's 5 minutes away from his business meeting. As he's walking to the meeting, he bypasses a bakery, and he smells delicious donuts being made. His lower powers, his appetites, says, that sounds good.
The irascible appetites.
No, it would be the concupiscible
oh, really?
Appetites.
Okay,
but his appetite says that would be good. But he knows if he goes into the bakery, he will be late to the meeting. Mm-hmm. So instead, he bypasses the bakery to get to the meeting on time.
Okay.
So what just happened there? His higher powers, his intellect and will, overpowered his lower powers, which would be his appetite.
Yeah.
Now, when your appetites overpower your intellect and will, specifically in the sexual realm, St. Thomas Aquinas would say that is the or at least my understanding is St. Thomas would say that is the definition of what the cardinal vice of lust is.
Hmm. Okay.
So when
you don't often hear about cardinal vices.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And we talk about virtue all the time here. You know, the habitual... doing good over and over again, the habitual act of doing good. Well, you know, vices are the exact opposite, the habitual act of doing the bad.
Yeah, makes sense. And that's what a vice is anyway.
Right.
I mean, it's not just like, oh, I did one bad thing one time. It's like, I always do this.
Right, I fall into this habit. So I was doing some research on a project that I'm working on, and when I came across St. Thomas's 8 Daughters of Lust, I was like, I had never heard of this. Did a little bit of research on it. I thought this would be a great topic for today. So because the sexual powers are so they're so pleasurable, mm-hmm. because sexual activities are so pleasurable, they dominate a lot of times our lower faculties, which would be our appetites.
Yeah.
And St. Thomas believes that the sexual sin will more likely lead us to blindness or irrationality than other sins because sex is of the greatest pleasures and absorbs the mind. So it dominates the mind. So, and you can see this all the time. Plato actually said that you find a man who is unjust, and it is the most unjust man is a man who is conquered by the vice of lust.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense because the sexual powers of the person are like the engine. They're like the jet engine of a person. Okay. God made man to be the kind of being that gives himself to another. Mm-hmm. It's what we're made to do. In everything, you know, in every relationship, friendship of all kinds, we are made to give ourselves to the other people. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you take that to its you know, it culminates in marriage, in the sexual union. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we had, I mean, God made us for this. This is what we're supposed to do. And so it's very easy to see how this could, very powerful force could overtake your will. And, but you know, we know that when that happens, when your will and your intellect is dominated by your
appetites.
the lower passions, now you're a slave to yourself and
right.
to your,
and similar,
to those passions.
When St. Thomas talks about how when you increase in one virtue, you increase in all virtues,
yeah.
it works the exact same with the other, because you're not being able to deny yourself. So if you're falling into the sin of lust, you'll be easier to fall into the sin of calumny or anger or, you know, something like that.
Calumny?
Calumny.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird word. I don't like that word.
Yeah. But so it works both ways.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Of course it does. That makes sense.
Right. So, okay. So, he has eight daughters of lust is what he called the first four.
When I first saw this, I said, yeah, lust would have a lot of children.
Right.
Like not because it wanted them, but just, you know, it ended up with them.
Right.
Yeah.
So he has four that attack the mind and then four that attack the will.
Okay.
So we'll go through maybe the first four. And I think the first one is probably the most important to spend the time on, which is blindness of thought,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, the blindness of the mind.
Yeah.
Which I think you can see that totally in people who struggle with lust.
Well, absolutely. I mean, even the Big Bang Theory, they joke around about this all the time, that when one of the guys has sex with somebody, that he's dumb the next day, you know, that it affects his brain and he's not able to think anymore. And you know that, oh, you shouldn't have sex because, you know, you're not going to be you won't be a good scientist anymore. And so if even the Big Bang Theory knows this,
mm-hmm.
then it must be true, because,
right.
Yeah, it's made its way down to even sitcoms.
Right. So if lust affects like your thought process, it affects how you view reality.
Mm-hmm.
You can see how, like, for instance, somebody who says, I want to be an actor, but they're terrible at acting.
Yeah.
But they're so so engulfed in the idea of being famous and making a bunch of money that they don't take the advice of their friend that says, hey, listen, man, you should probably pursue a different career than
acting.
Because
you ain't good.
Because you're not very good at it. But they're so engulfed in the idea of being famous and obtaining all this money that they don't take that advice.
Yeah.
Okay. So, or like the alcoholic who continually enjoys, you know, getting drunk, you know, falling into this vice of
Or people who are, you know, in the cancer ward outside smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right? Which, I mean, so it goes to the point where you're not willing to take any advice. You're so blind to the vice that you're in, and that's the interesting thing about lust. Is St. Thomas says the deeper that you get into the vice of lust, the more blind you become to the point of you don't even realize that you are falling into this vice.
Yeah, and you know what I think is interesting is that we're talking here about lust. We're not talking about sex.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about that,
because
I think that's a good point. Oh, well, we probably won't have time.
Well, I think we have time. When college guys are, you know, all they're doing is trying to get laid.
Mm-hmm.
It does dominate their thoughts, and they forsake other things that they should be doing. Okay. I was once in college, and I just know that it has that dumbing effect on the brain, in that, oh, I'm not thinking about these other things. And you know, you'll hear women say, oh, men only want one thing, you know, they don't think with their head.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like these are little social proofs of what we're talking about, but the married man does not suffer from these consequences. You know what I mean? And that's interesting, and I think it's because he's not pursuing it. You know, he's not pursuing sex. He's married. You
so
know,
it's
not something that he has to spend energy on, you know, and I don't think it's something that was actually intended to have energy spent on in this way. You should have energy. You should spend energy pursuing a relationship. And that relationship should bloom into a sexual, into a sexuality, sexual expression. But it shouldn't, you know, we're putting the cart before the horse
right,
now in society.
I think that the lust comes from, you know, the lack of the custody of the mind. You know, we're creatures. And so, like, you know, you see something that is attractive and you want it because it's a good thing. You know, yeah. The body is good.
Sure.
You even, without thinking about it, have some kind of thought of a sexual nature. Before you think about it, still not a sin. Mm-hmm. Now, when you start entertaining the idea of that sin or start fantasizing about this idea of a sexual encounter or things like that, that's the lack of custody of the mind, which is where the sin comes in.
Yeah.
Because it's the perversion of the good.
Mm-hmm.
It's perverting the good. It now becomes more of the inward instead of the outward. You're no longer wanting to give. You're wanting to have.
Yeah, to snatch, to take.
Right. So we only have 2 minutes, so let's go over the other three really quick.
Okay.
Rashness, which is the concern, it concerns the way the disorder of the sexual desire hinders the counsel, what is to be done for the sake of the end. So it can blind you to the means of achieving those ends. So it's like, I don't care how I get it. I just want, like, you can see these guys all the time, you know, who struggle with the sin of lust. It's like, impulse.
Right.
It doesn't matter how. I just need this.
Right.
They act on their appetites quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They get, you know, it's and in order to counter that, you have to have the self-denial. You have to deny yourself in the little things to where whenever big things come up, you're able to deny yourself. And that's what I mean. That's why we're in this season of Lent right now. It's a denial of self.
Yeah.
The next one is thoughtlessness, the failure of the intellect even to attend to the means of the end, not even bother to think of the means or the ends. So again, it's just that.
Which is similar.
Yeah, which is very, very similar. But you're getting to the point where you're no longer thinking about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a complete thoughtless. And I think that goes to just being completely absent-minded of anything.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's absent-mindedness.
Yeah. And the last one is inconstancy. It's like, again, we kind of already talked about it, but it's the lack of custody of the mind. It's being able to, it's dwelling on this idea.
Yeah, being swayed to and fro against your will, even.
Right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, those are the four daughters of lust that attack the mind. When we get back, we're going to talk about the ones that attack the will. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, a.k.a. The Tongue. We're talking about lust and all the daughters, the eight daughters of lust. This is something put out by Thomas Aquinas, and I think that Thomas Aquinas is really the expert on sexual sin.
Well, he actually expounds on this, believe it or not, from St. Gregory the Great.
Really? Okay.
So this wasn't his thoughts on, he only expounded upon these eight daughters of lust from St. Gregory the Great.
Well, I think that he is a reliable source for everything, but especially the realm of sexuality, because he was one of the few saints in history who was given a gift, a grace, a very unique, special grace of God, where he did not struggle with sexual temptation.
Yes. I mean, that's why, you know, he's the universal doctor of the church. So, pretty much.
But everything. But, you know, his parents, he wanted to become a monk. His parents locked him in a tower and they sent a prostitute in there to try to seduce him. And he chased her off with like a flame.
Hot iron.
And he carved a cross, burned a cross in the door. Mm-hmm. And then that night he received a grace from God. He said, "You will never be tempted with sexual desire again." And right. So I think that makes his writings on the subject even more credible, because the further away you get from a sin, the more accurately you can see it.
You no longer have the blindness of mind.
Right. Yeah. And so because this was something he did not struggle with at all,
mm-hmm.
I think it gives him clearer vision on the twistedness of it.
Right.
Okay.
So we just discussed last segment on, you know, the four daughters that attack the mind. Now we can go into the four that consist of the attacking of the will.
Yeah.
And the first one is self-love, which is very, I mean, to me, that's very obvious.
I have that.
Yeah. So self-love is
homo.
It is the thoughtless. It's like it's a thoughtless person that entirely sunk into their disorderly pleasures. So it almost encompasses all of the appetites of the mind or the attacks of the mind and manifests itself into this self-love or this attack of the will.
Yeah.
Dr. Edward Fazer says the mind is corrupted by lust. The mind corrupted by lust wants to make reality conform to itself rather than to make itself conform to reality,
mm-hmm.
which I think is, hence the very idea that there is such a thing as natural objective moral order, especially where sex is concerned, becomes unbearable to the lustful person.
Yeah.
And I think that you can see that, with men and women who struggle with lust, it seems like, you know, one degree of sexual disorder never satisfies the appetite. And so they go deeper in, you know, there's
never, or for long anyway.
For long. Yeah. Yeah. And so it seems like that they continue growing deeper and deeper into this disorder of sexual desire.
Yeah. I think it's important to say that this is what sin always does, is it takes a good that man was created for and to be and twists it into something perverse. So in this case, man is made to make a gift of himself. And now he is making a gift to himself,
mm-hmm.
in the self-love of, you know, I now serve myself instead of using myself to serve others.
Right. Because, the sexual embrace is giving of yourself to your wife, but it's also a procreation act. You know, it's unitive and procreative.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nothing to do with you. It's all about giving of yourself to right. your wife and also to potentially a newborn baby.
Only a servant.
Or a new baby.
Only a servant, a true servant, can truly make love. If you're not a servant, then you're not doing it right.
Well, yeah, I mean, because that's loving one, you know, willing the good of the other, you know, desiring yeah. to lay down yourself, like Christ says, you know, lay down yourself like he did for the church. To your wife,
mm-hmm.
you know, Christ died for the church. Men, you're supposed to die for your wife. You know, in Ephesians, it talks about this. You know, so I mean, that's it's the whole self-sacrificial love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to talk about self-love before we go on to the next one?
No.
So the next one is hatred of God. So we had self-love, but the next one is hatred of God, which is it sounds a little harsh, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds harsh, but if God is being itself. If it is goodness itself, if he is goodness itself, then the hate of what is true and good, ipso facto means that it's a hatred of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I think you see this play out all the time in hatred of religion, which, religion is just the worship of God. And so people will literally sexual sin has caused, millions of people to leave the church.
Well, yeah,
because the church won't let me live my life the way I want to live it, so well, I'm just going to leave.
Well, our mother said in Fatima that more sins go to hell because of the sins of the flesh than any other sin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that at all. In fact, you know, this kind of goes back to the blindness of the mind, but over and over and over again, and I don't mean to make this political, and I don't mean this about every liberal in general, but I have known many people who were not just a liberal, but they were very extreme in their liberality. And when I've had conversations about, like, well, why do you think that? Why do you think that? Why do you think that? Over and over again, it has always come back to a sexual sin in their life that they're justifying. And that's weird to me that it would play itself out in that way. And that's just my experience that I've had with several people. But that's what it does. And it ends up, you end up becoming an atheist because of these sexual sins in your life, because they become your God.
Well, again, you're conforming reality to yourself instead of yourself to reality.
Right. Yeah.
I do want to mention this. I'm paraphrasing from Dr. Edward Fazer, who's expounding on this, but he says, if someone knows that he is chained to sins of the flesh, yet still loves God and wants to be free from these sins, his love is sincere. So I think that's very important to understand that, you know, even if you're falling into these sins of lust, yet you want to be freed from it, it doesn't mean that you hate God in and of itself. That means that you're falling into a sin, but your love is sincere if you want to conquer the sin.
Yeah.
It's very, it's also very important to understand that, you know, if I want to go to Ireland, there's a difference between I want to go to Ireland and I intend to go to Ireland.
Right.
Right. If I want to go to, I want to go to Ireland. That doesn't mean I'm planning on going anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. But me too. I'm not saving money to get there, but.
Right. But I would like to go.
Yeah.
But if I intend on going to Ireland, that means I'm taking steps to making sure that I'm going to go to Ireland. Similarly, we should not want to be saints, but we should intend to be saints.
Right.
And what does that mean? That means you have steps that you're taking to make sure that you are becoming a saint through the grace of God. I mean, it's not through us, but there's a difference between wanting and intending. And I think we need to make sure that we understand.
Sure.
That there's an importance there.
Yeah, and also just because you might struggle with sins of lust, that doesn't mean that all of these are going to be you.
Right.
Only a few of these might play themselves out in your life. But I think that if you give yourself over to the sin of lust, it is only a matter of time before all of these will play themselves out. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like if you say, I'm not going to fight this fight anymore.
Well, you're falling into despair.
I'm just going to be a lustful dude, you know?
Right. Well, and so similarly, he says, but if someone loves his desires and sins and doesn't want to turn away or listen to those who urge them to turn away, his love is not sincere.
Mm. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's
makes sense.
That's hard-hitting truth.
Yeah.
Is what that is. Anything else that you'd like to discuss on hatred of God?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so the next one is love of this world. So excessive and disordered love of the lower powers is not natural. You know, we talked with Carlo Broussard not too long ago on one of our episodes, and he was talking about, again, that, you know, we drink for its goodness, right? I mean, on the show, we drink for its goodness, but it is a lower power good. It's a lower appetite good,
right?
Which is one of the lowest levels of good. Power of appetite or power of mind and will are the higher appetite powers. I'm sorry, are the higher powers. And so this is a lower level good. But if you get so deep into these lower level vices, then you love this world, which is not what we're made for. We're made for the glory of God. We're made for the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard to keep your mind focused on the kingdom of God if you're so absorbed in the things of this world.
Right.
It's the whole be in this world, but not of this world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And you see that all the time on the news and just modern day culture where people will be freaking out about stuff. But if you step back and say, well, from their perspective, if this life is all that there is, all of a sudden, whatever it is that, okay, like the whole college scandal, you know, people like rich people paying extra money to get their kids into college. I mean, that's wrong, obviously, but I didn't think it was this huge. It's like, didn't everybody know? Or I kind of assumed like, yeah, I'm sure that happens all the time. But from the worldly perspective, this is egregious because, you know, if this life is all that there is, you get one shot
mm-hmm.
and you didn't get into college. I mean, the rest of your life could have been altered, you know.
Right. So,
I mean, so it becomes a much bigger deal.
Right. Edward Fraser says people who are a slave to the lower powers are disinterested and incapable of seeing the beauty of the next life and what we're really made for.
Yeah.
Which this is the importance of fasting, right? We're in this liturgical season of Lent, mm-hmm. which is it's this denying of self. And whenever you deny yourself, you realize all of the necessities that are needed in this world outside of yourself.
Yeah.
So I think it's important it's important to fast. It's important to abstain on Fridays. And those are the eight daughters of lust.
There they are.
Hopefully we made a little bit of sense.
They're ugly daughters.
The last one was despair of this future world, which is what we just...
Basically got. The same as so. Loving the current world too much.
So, we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford.
find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.